here. It would completely embarrass Lisa if I made any comment at all about her baptism from the pulpit. So I'm not going to express how thrilled that I am about that. Well, maybe I will. No, I just think that is just wonderful. And may God be praised for all of that. Thank you for what you've done today and what an encouragement that has been to all of us too. This morning we talked about the wisdom of God in establishing a local congregation arrangement. In other words, God's plan whereby saints in a local area would organize themselves into a local congregation with that local leadership that they would appoint, and they would pool their resources and be in mutual agreement to function as a New Testament church, as a New Testament congregation. And when you look at the New Testament, what you see are these congregations just popping up wherever the gospel was spread, wherever people would be baptized into Jesus Christ, they would then assemble and organize themselves together with those of like precious faith who also have been baptized into Jesus Christ, that they might collectively work as a local church. And that's God's plan. That's how God designed his saints to function in a collective way. Or we might use this expression, that's how God organized his people to function in these various independent congregations spread throughout the world and all of these local areas. But tonight, I want us to ask this question. When you look at the New Testament, is there any organizational structure that you read about in the New Testament larger than a local congregation? In other words, we read in the scriptures about the apostles in the first century establishing this local church arrangement, and as we've said, having saints in a local area to organize themselves under the leadership of those local elders and to work together and all of that. And so you have these local congregations throughout the world. That's what the New Testament talks about, certainly. But my question is, does the New Testament also talk about some larger kind of organizational structure of his people or of these congregations? Does the New Testament talk about these congregations somehow functioning collectively and banding themselves together, multiple churches, multiple congregations functioning together as one, having some kind of headship or leadership of this larger than a local church organization? Do you read about anything like that in the scriptures? Well, the answer to that question is no. I certainly don't see anything like that in the scriptures. If there was some kind of an organizational structure that God had designed larger than just a local congregation, then we would certainly read about that in the scriptures. We can imagine how such a organizational structure might be. We could certainly imagine that, say, when the Apostle Paul went into the area of Galatia and began to establish congregations, as we said this morning, in Antioch of Pisidia, or in Lystra and Iconium and Derbe, we can imagine that maybe the Apostle Paul might try to then organize those congregations into some larger organizational structure and maybe appoint some kind of leadership over, say, all of those local churches in that district or that region. You could certainly imagine that kind of thing happening, but that's certainly something that stands out that the New Testament never speaks about that kind of thing. You had those kind of organizational structures in the Greco-Roman world. In fact, the political Roman Empire was structured in that way. It was that kind of a larger organizational structure. But you don't read of anything like that in the scriptures. You only read about local churches, all independent from one another, not functioning collectively as part of some larger multi-congregation type of organization. I'll again, we could maybe imagine that the church at Ephesus, maybe the apostles might, by God's plan, might say that the church at Ephesus, God wanted that to be the main church that would oversee a whole bunch of other churches in that province of Asia. You could imagine that kind of thing. Certainly that's the way that the Roman government was set up. But that's not the way that the Lord organized His church. The Lord did organize His people into local congregations, but these are local independent churches. They're not congregations that are somehow tied together with other congregations in some kind of organizational structure. Instead, what you read about in the New Testament are elders or overseers that are just overseeing that local flock among them, as Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7. There were elders appointed in every church, as Acts 14 talks about, but there certainly is no place in the Scriptures where you read about some kind of higher position of leadership than a local church elder, maybe some kind of a prelate or some kind of a district bishop that has all these congregations and their respective elderships under his authority. You don't ever read about that in these Scriptures. And so what you see when you look at the New Testament are just independent churches or congregations that are functioning independent of one another. And they're doing their own work. They're not part of some larger organization with some larger leadership, and they're not working collectively by means of some kind of institutions or agencies or some kind of organization that would tie them all together so they'd function in some collective way. You don't read about any of that. And the reason why I emphasize all of that, it's not because to this audience I think somehow that's not understood, or that there's maybe some push among us here to try to have some kind of larger than local church organizational structure. But the fact of the matter is that when you look historically at what churches have done throughout these centuries, one of the departures from the apostolic pattern is in this very area. Are you aware of the fact that in the second century, the early part of the second century starting, and then on into the third and the fourth centuries, there began to develop a shift, a gradual shift in the way that churches began to see themselves and how they saw themselves organized as Christians? You began, for instance, to have, say, one large congregation, usually in some large town, begin to think about those congregations in some of the villages nearby. And sometimes this kind of thing happened innocently, where you've got maybe a smaller group a few miles away down the road, or another group a few miles away down the road, and they don't have a lot of experienced leaders there. And so you would begin to have maybe the eldership of that larger church in that larger city start to, well, just begin to oversee the other congregations in its area. And nobody really thought much about that. In fact, it kind of seemed like it was a good idea. And then eventually, well, if you're going to have that, well, there would maybe need to be some kind of larger leadership or some higher position of leadership. And so what began to develop was one elder who was like the chief bishop, and he was sort of the bishop over the entire church, or maybe this entire collection of churches in that area. And so you might have, say, a bishop and then an eldership under him, but he was this key leader, and then he and his group were overseeing these congregations in their area. And so now all of a sudden, what do you have? Well, you have some kind of organizational structure that is other than, and certainly larger than, just that simple structure that God had appointed through His apostles. And eventually what happened historically, as you get to the 5th century and the 6th century, is that those various districts where you had some leadership over all these congregations in their district, well, they began to create a larger organizational system with those of other districts and all the congregations of other districts. And finally, what you eventually have is the organizational structure of the Roman Catholic Church, where you've got a centralized board of leaders headed by a pope and his group of cardinals, who then oversee all of the various regions. And in all the various regions, you have leaders of the congregations in their regions, and over the leaders of the congregations in their sub-districts, and all that kind of thing. And so now what you have is a very complex organizational structure that is certainly not something that you see in the first century. And that kind of structure, as I said, is exactly what you see with the Roman Catholic Church. And it really has been imitated by a lot of denominational groups. In fact, really, when you think about a denomination, one of the things that probably comes to your mind and comes to the minds of a lot of people is, well, a denomination is wrong because a denomination divides the body of Christ and begins to, the whole denominational concept ultimately says it's okay to have this group of churches teaching one set of doctrines, and this group of churches, they have their own peculiar set of doctrines and practices and all this kind of thing. And certainly you might be thinking that that's part of what makes denominational wrong, that's part of what makes denominationalism wrong, and you would be exactly right in all that. But I would say to you that there's more to it than just that. Even the very structure, the very organizational structure, is something that is not what you read about in the Scriptures. And so I want to talk with you a little bit about that, if I may. This idea of independent congregations is something that throughout history, denominations have changed and altered and joined congregations together in some kind of larger organizational structure. We're talking about a denominational organizational structure. And if you maybe in your background, if you've maybe come previously from a denomination, then the things I'm going to be talking about, you'll be very familiar with. And some of us maybe haven't had that kind of background, so we're not as familiar. But you need to understand that the denominational structure, the way everything is organized, is you've got all the congregations that are part of that denomination. Well, they are overseen in some way by some leadership board. Now, that board of leaders is going to be referred to by different names and titles, and the nature of their authority might be different. Sometimes the board of leaders, sometimes they are appointed by a particular few, sometimes they are voted in, sometimes it's much more of a representative thing. Maybe all the congregations, well, they pick leaders that will then represent them at their synod meeting for all that district, or maybe the entire denomination. And so they will talk about various issues and practices and doctrines and all that they're going to follow. And they have representatives, much like in our political party system. Sometimes that's the way it works. But in some way, there's some kind of leadership, some kind of board of leadership that is overseeing then the collective activity of all the congregations in that denomination. And in addition to just the board of leaders, what you typically have is some kind of organization that handles the missionary activity of all the congregations in our denominational organization. Some kind of missionary or evangelistic society. And the way this works is all the congregations, they pool their money so that this missionary society can then send out preachers or can do various things on behalf of evangelism, on behalf of then all these congregations in that denominational church, that organization of congregations that makes up that particular denomination. And typically there are schools or seminaries that are created that are the peculiar schools or seminaries for that group of churches. Especially with a seminary, the concept there is that this school is going to produce those men who will be our ministers, our preachers, and they'll be trained in our school in the way that our denomination dictates. And so that's the way that that seminary functions. And then usually someone who has gone through that program, he's ordained to be a minister, qualified to be a minister, to preach or to administer the various rites that are peculiar to that denomination. Or there oftentimes are other schools, maybe not seminaries, but maybe more secular type schools. But still, they are schools that are run, supported by, and are adjuncts of the various congregations that make up that denominational organization. And there is very often a publishing house, institution, or organization that then publishes the literature for that denomination. It's kind of their official literature that they put out. And so there's usually some kind of a publishing house that then takes care of all of that. And again, this is just another kind of agency, another kind of institution through which the congregations that comprise that denomination can function. And historically, there have been a lot of benevolence agencies that have been created and have been adjuncts of the congregations of this denominational organization. It might be a nursing home, or it might be a hospital, or it might be an orphan's home. And so all of these benevolence type works, well, the congregations and the organization, well, they pool their monies and support these benevolence agencies. And those are the agencies that then represent that denomination and through which the congregations of that denomination can then function and do this work to provide for orphans or to provide for the elderly or to provide for the sick in the hospital or what have you. And so what you see is this kind of denominational structure whereby these various institutions that we're talking about here tie all these congregations together so they can function collectively in this denominational structure. And if you take a look at the websites, which is very easy for us to do in our modern day, if you take a look at the websites of these various denominations, they'll just describe for you their organizational structure. I mean, if you go to the official site of the Roman Catholic Church, and you can go there to, you know, click on the particular tabs that will discuss this, and you'll see just a whole discussion of what is a very complex kind of organizational structure with the Catholic Church and the hierarchy and how everything works and how ultimately then the Pope and the Board of Cardinals under him, how they then oversee all the congregations of the Catholic Church. And you see how all that works. You'll see a discussion of the various institutions that the Catholic Church uses, that all these Catholic congregations then support and are all representatives then of that Catholic Church denomination. And so I invite you to look at what these websites say, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Here, for instance, is the website of the Presbyterian Church USA, one of several Presbyterian denominations here in our country. And if you look at the website, again, they'll talk about their organizational structure. It isn't as complex as the Catholic Church is, but still you see this kind of larger than local church organizational structure, and they'll talk about their conference meetings that they have and the representatives that will be coming to those conference meetings, representatives of all the congregations that make up that Presbyterian denominational church. You see the website of the Southern Baptist Convention. This is a less complex structure. In fact, in some ways, it's kind of a loosely structured kind of denomination. But nevertheless, what you have are all these Baptist churches that have mutually agreed to be part of this Southern Baptist Convention. They pool their resources. They send their representatives to their association meetings, their synod meetings. They decide various things that are going to be done. They've got the various kinds of institutions I've talked about, not just the schools and the seminaries, but the publishing houses and all that kind of thing, all the benevolence agencies. And so you can look at these websites and see all that I'm talking about. Here's the Assemblies of God. And again, this is part of what makes a denomination this kind of organizational structure, where you've got the various leaders who are overseeing the congregational units and then all the institutions and agencies through which the Assemblies of God function. And so you can look at all this on the websites and just see exactly what I'm talking about, where these kinds of institutions are then created as the institutions for our denomination through which our churches function, through which our congregations function. And when you look at that, it's like nothing you read about in the New Testament. In fact, it is striking when you read the scriptures and what was going on in the first century. You don't read about these kinds of larger than local congregation type of organizations. You don't read about leaders and the terms that are used for the leadership. So many of them are terms you don't read about in Scripture. You don't read about popes in Scripture. You don't read about cardinals. You do read about elders or bishops, but you don't read about them with the definition that's so often given to them by these groups, because they've changed the entire organizational structure. And when they talk about their church, they're talking about their denomination. They mean by that their organization of congregations. That's what they're thinking of. And they function organizationally through means of all these institutions that they've created. The New Testament knows nothing about that. The New Testament talks about independent congregations, all doing their own work with just that local oversight. And you certainly do read in the scriptures about, say, the various congregations, maybe in a particular area, all agreeing among themselves, each congregation agreeing, say, that there's some need, like, say, the needy saints in Jerusalem. Paul talks about that in Romans and 2 Corinthians and 1 Corinthians, where there are needy saints in Jerusalem. And so Paul makes reference to all of that. And yes, all of those congregations in Macedonia and Achaia, each congregation individually and autonomously chose to send relief money to those needy saints in Jerusalem. And that's what they did. And Paul helped them transport it. But each of those congregations functioned independently and made their decisions autonomously. So again, what you have are independent congregations, just independent local churches. And that's the limit of the organizational structure that you see in the scriptures. How about our history? Because really why I'm talking about all this is to maybe kind of help you understand some things about, quote, our history. What do I mean by, quote, our history? Well, I'm using that terminology a little bit accommodatively. But the fact of the matter is that just like we here so often say that we're trying to be a New Testament congregation, just trying to follow what the Scriptures teach, well, certainly in the history of our country, and certainly in the 1800s and the 1900s, there have been other groups that have sought to do the very thing that we claim that we're trying to do. And so these groups are trying to restore New Testament Christianity. When you just look at their history, what you begin to see is that even among those groups of people who are trying to go back and follow the New Testament pattern of Christianity, what you see, just like throughout the rest of religious history, you begin to see some gradual departures here and there. For instance, when you look in 1849, that's a significant date, you know, in a way. Because in 1849, you had established the American Christian Missionary Society. Here was a missionary society like what I was just talking about earlier, like what the denominations had come up with. But here you had various congregations who might refer to themselves as a Church of Christ or a Christian church or use some other name, but they were trying to do ostensibly what we say that we're trying to do. And so in that sense, they're people like us, quote, quote. And they came up with the idea of having a missionary society that all the congregations would then send money to and support, and this missionary society would then send out preachers, and this would be a way for all of the congregations of Churches of Christ to then do evangelism collectively. And when people came up with that idea, there were a lot of folks who said, that's just great. The denomination have been doing it for a long time. Sounds good. But others were saying, but wait a minute. Where do you read about that in the scriptures? Where did the first century churches ever try to do their evangelistic work collectively, where all these congregations somehow pooled their resources to create some kind of institution that would do evangelistic work on their behalf? Where do you read about that in the scriptures? And a lot of folks eventually said, well, whether you read about it or not in the scriptures, we don't really care. It's a good idea, we think, and we're going to go with it. And so what you had, just from a sociological point of view, you began to kind of have what might be called a split, where you had a split between, say, the disciples of Christ and the Christian church and Churches of Christ. And it's because people were coming up with an organizational structure, an organizational system that was like what the denominations had created, but it's not what the apostles had established. Or how about our history a little bit closer to home? 1950s, 1970s. The idea of benevolence agencies and schools. This became a real issue among groups who would refer to themselves as Churches of Christ. You would have the idea that, well, we have a lot of orphans out here and we have a lot of elderly people, so wouldn't it be a good thing for us to create now some benevolence organizations, some orphans' homes and some nursing homes, and so all of us Churches of Christ will all pool our monies and we'll establish these and support these, and that's a way by which we can just take care of orphans and take care of the elderly. And where'd they get the idea? Well, the denominational world had been doing that. And so it just seemed like a way for all these congregations to be able to just function collectively and to do these things. And so that's what people began to do. That's what churches began to do. And also schools. Well, not necessarily calling them seminaries, though sometimes maybe that distinction, you might not call it that, but it would come pretty close to it. But nevertheless, the idea of establishing schools that will be our Church of Christ schools. And so all the Churches of Christ will just send their money to these schools and support these schools. And so this will be this kind of adjunct organization, educational organization, whether we're talking about preparing guys to preach or whether we're just talking about educating our young people in general. But these will be our Church of Christ schools. And so we're providing the money for that and supporting them. And so in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, this became a real issue because a lot of people were just advocating this and saying this would be a good thing. And other people were saying, wait a minute. The idea of helping those who are in need, well, of course that's a good thing. And the idea of educating people, well, of course that's a good thing. But what you're doing here is you're creating some kind of larger organizational structure than just that simple local church that God established in the first century. And you're doing exactly what the denominations have done by creating these institutions through which then all the congregations of our group, we didn't call it a denomination in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but that's really about what it amounted to conceptually. That's what our group of congregations, that's how they will function collectively and do all these works. And people were saying, wait a minute, that's not what the apostles established in the first century. That's not the simple organizational structure that God set up. Where do you read about these kinds of benevolence agencies and schools through which all the congregations would function? Where do you read about that in the first century? And then a lot of people began to argue this. Well, okay, you don't read about, say, these institutions like that, that are created separate and apart from a local church to kind of function in that way. But what we'll do is we'll make the elders of one church, and they call this the sponsoring church elders. These elders will be in charge of these institutions, these organizations, on behalf of all the congregations, who then send those elders money so they can be the ones leading in all of that. And well, all you've done is just kind of alter the chart a little bit, but you're still creating some larger kind of organizational structure than just the simple, independent, autonomous, local congregations that the Lord established. And so this is what has been an issue among us, quote, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And let me say this, a lot of people sometimes get the idea, and maybe it's because, in fact, I think it probably is, because we tend not to preach on this enough here in recent years. In fact, I think preachers are guilty of that. I raise my hand as guilty of that. I don't think we preach on this enough. I've had a lot of people say to me, you know, the generation that we live in, or the generation of young people right now, they are growing up, they have no idea about any of these issues. And that's exactly right. They sure don't. And that's to our shame, because we've not been talking about this. But here's what some people think. Oh, well, all this is just a matter of how a church can use its money. Which, if you say it like that, that just kind of sounds, you know, it's not really a big deal. It's just all about how you use money. That's not what this is all about. That's not at all what this is all about. It's about the very thing that we've been talking about this whole time, about how the organizational structure that God set up from the very beginning, it's really being altered. And the reason why these changes have been proffered is because the denominational world was using them. And it was a good thing, people thought. And so why can't Churches of Christ organize themselves in this larger kind of organizational structure? Wouldn't that be a good thing? And that's the issue. That's the real issue here. And the fact of the matter is that the New Testament, according to God's wisdom, teaches that God just wanted a simple kind of organizational structure where people in this area are working and functioning collectively, and they're independent and autonomous from the group of Christians in this local area, and they're doing their own work, and another group's doing its own work. And think about the wisdom of God and all that. First of all, and surely we can see this on a practical level, if you've got needy people among you, needy saints among you in your local area, who's best able to meet their needs but those people right there in that local group? And also, if you create some kind of larger organizational structure so that all these congregations are somehow tied together, and you just keep going with all of that, okay, if there's error in one congregation, what's going to happen? It's going to infect this entire larger organization that you've created. Now, in God's plan, you've got each congregation that's independent and autonomous. If you have one congregation in this Tampa area that begins to teach false doctrine or preach wrong things, it's a sad thing. It's going to corrupt that local group, but it's going to be limited just there. And the damage is limited to just there. And so when you look at what God has done, creating a system where Christians organize themselves in local congregations that are independent from other congregations. You see the wisdom of God in all of that. And so we need to appreciate the wisdom of God in establishing and organizing his people into a congregation of disciples, as we talked about this morning, who work together and worship together, and they know each other's needs, and they teach each other the truth, and they pool their money to help their local church do its work, and they're independent and autonomous from other congregations. It's not that we're unconcerned about other Christians in other local areas, certainly we are, but we're not organizationally tied with them. And we're not contributing our funds to institutions that would tie us organizationally together as congregations of people, again, in some arrangement that would be foreign to what the New Testament apostles were establishing. I hope the things I've said this evening make sense to you. I hope this is understandable, and maybe it's clarified a few things for you. I've had a lot of people, and the reason why I'm preaching this lesson, I've had a lot of people who have come to me and have kind of asked questions about this, and they've just been very honest and candid. Said, I don't really understand this. And again, if the things I've said this evening, if you haven't understood them before, then I take blame for that, and I think we preachers and elders need to take blame for that. We're not teaching enough on these things. If after I have presented this lesson, if you still don't understand, I really take blame for that. But I do hope these things maybe have clarified this a little bit for you. And if you'd like to talk about this further, about any of these issues, certainly would be happy to discuss that with you. I appreciate so very much you listening to me. You know, what we're trying to do, again, is to be New Testament Christians. And when you look at what the New Testament says, we can see what the first century Christians were taught to do, to obey the gospel, how to worship every first day of the week, how to do various things in a congregation, all part of God's plan. That's what we need to honor. The organizational structure that we're talking about tonight, it's one of those things that we can see in the New Testament is God's will, and so that's what we need to be following. I wonder if there's someone here tonight who needs, in some way, the help of this group. Can we pray for you? Can we assist you in some spiritual problem that you're having in your life? Is there some need you have that we can help fulfill? We want to do that. If you've never been baptized into Jesus Christ, we want to help you obey the gospel. And so whatever be your need, let that be known while together we stand in